I don't know, Bev, if you intentionally called this stewardship campaign "The Time Is Now" because it's Spring Forward Sunday. But I am so glad you all made it this morning. And you sound like you're not really all that tired. The UUA has a curriculum in the Tapestry of Faith program called The Wisdom Path: Money, Spirit, and Life. As part of that curriculum, participants are asked to share ideas for a sermon that they might preach on the good news of Unitarian Universalism. They're asked to come up with a resonant message, especially in light of what they are exploring about their personal relationship to money and finances. When I taught this class in Tallahassee, I warned them that I might use some of their talking points in a stewardship sermon, which I did. For starters, I changed that sermon title from a dry "Voluntary Organizations and the Spirit of Stewardship" to a participant's suggestion that his good news sermon would deliver this directive: invest in your own religious freedom. Invest in your own religious freedom. It's a timeless message for our Unitarian Universalist congregations. When people explore what it means to be a member of our congregation, as we did last month in a new UU orientation session, and as we do in the 6-session new UU class that is currently being offered on Sunday afternoons, folks learn a little bit about UU history and theology. This includes what it means to be free religionists. They also learn about our congregational polity, that we are self-governing congregations and have been so since our Puritan forebears wrote the Cambridge Platform in 1648. You're probably getting tired of hearing me say that, but it's so, so important. Congregational polity means that the members are responsible for all decisions made by the whole, whether on the national level through delegates to the UUA's General Assembly each June, or at home through their elected officers. In Brew's case, the Board of Directors and Finance Committee make fiduciary and policy decisions, or by congregational vote on matters required by the congregation's bylaws. An example of that is calling your minister. Brew membership participates in the democratic process enshrined in our congregational polity and in the fifth principle of Unitarian Universalism each June at the annual meeting, and as needed during special congregational meetings on an as-needed basis. We are a voluntary organization. Today, we officially launch our annual budget drive known as a canvas or pledge campaign, the results of which determine the budget for the next fiscal year. You, the members of Bull Run Unitarian Universalists, approve the final budget at the annual meeting in June, and the investment in your religious freedom is at stake. Investing in your own religious freedom is another topic that people interested in membership in our voluntary organization learn about when they take a new member class or talk to members of the membership committee, stewardship team, or their minister. Now, the Cambridge Platform did make a mistake here, because up until the early 19th century, everyone living in the local parish was expected to pay parish taxes to support the church. Overturning this matter is what led to truly free religious expression and the full and final separation of church from state. If you're interested in this topic, you might look up the Dedham decision of 1836. Interestingly enough, it was Massachusetts, ground zero for Unitarianism in the United States, that was the last state to abolish parish taxes and make complete the real separation of church and state. Maybe in another sermon I'll tell you about a judicial decision in New Hampshire, the New England state whose motto is live free or die, that came 60 years after the Dedham decision and also relates to the separation of church and state. When people join a Unitarian Universalist congregation, they promise to be faithful stewards, giving time, energy, and money. Unlike those faith traditions where members are required to tithe 10% of their household income, in our free churches, a financial contribution to the congregation is not a test of membership. While we would love for you to dig deep into your pockets and pledge 10%, we won't strip you of your membership for not being able to do so. No one is turned away due to inability to make a monetary pledge. Nevertheless, we do ask that each and every member give what they can afford of their time, their talents, and their treasure. The reality is that financial contributions to support the congregation's life and work are necessary for this free religious community to exist and to survive. Brew is already over 35 years old, but among us still are philanthropic members without whose generosity this congregation would never have come into being, thrived, moved into this building at the corner of Church and Main Streets. We've been here in the heart of Old Town Manassas since the summer of 1999. And I think it would be great if we plan a 20th anniversary party for sometime next year, replete with the Brew players, okay? We'll figure it out. Although these benefactors provided so much towards the growth of Brew over the years, it's your turn to invest in your own religious freedom and the free religious society that will be here in Manassas well into the future. All religious traditions and cultures recognize this need to take care of the future community. In Native American traditions, this stewardship is often expressed as the seventh generation of the seventh generation. Unitarian Universalism has been around in these United States for more than 225 years already. Seven generations beyond the next seven would put the tradition close to 500 years young. Don't you want to do your part to ensure this? If so, will you step up to the plate with a generous pledge to fund the operating budget in the fiscal year for 2020? Maybe you'll be one of the ones to stretch further than before, giving at a visionary level of 5 to 9% of your household income, or even at the transformational level of a full 10% tithe. I want to shift, though, this discourse on membership and financial responsibility now to why it is imperative that each of us invest in our collective religious freedom. Therefore, I'm going to refresh your minds the reading from James Luther Adams, or JLA as we refer to him in shorthand. Before I do, I should point out that Adams had firsthand experience of Germany's descent into the evils of totalitarianism under the fascist leadership of Adolf Hitler and the National Socialists, commonly called the Nazi Party. James Luther Adams was profoundly disturbed by an encounter he had in Nuremberg in 1927. He learned from a union worker who stepped in and pulled Adams out of the fray when JLA naively asked the people around him in a huge crowd at an annual mass rally about the meaning of the swastika and began to argue with them. He was a theologian. He was going to argue about what that meant. Well, this union worker extended radical hospitality to Adams, inviting him home to share a meager meal with his family. It was there that JLA learned the economic distress out of which Nazism was born. That one organization after another that refused to bow to the Nazis was being threatened with compulsion. Freedom of association was being abolished. This experience, as well as experiencing firsthand the belated resistance of the churches to attacks upon freedom of speech and freedom of association a decade later, prompted Adams to ask himself some pointed questions. What, in your typical behavior as an American citizen, have you done that would help prevent the rise of authoritarian government in your own country? What disciplines of democracy, except voting, have you habitually undertaken with other people which could serve in any way directly to affect public policy? More bluntly stated, I asked myself, he said, what precisely is the difference between you and a political idiot? The reading I chose for this morning follows immediately after these embarrassing and self-confronting questions. Here it is again. A characteristic feature of any democratic society is freedom of association. Every totalitarian theory rejects just this freedom. Indeed, the rejection of freedom of association, the rejection of the freedom to form groups that attempt democratically to affect public policy, can serve as the beginning of a definition of totalitarianism. Only through the exercise of freedom of association can consent of the governed become effective. Only through the exercise of freedom of association can the citizen in a democracy participate in the process that gives shape to public opinion and the public policy. For this reason, the voluntary association is a distinctive and indispensable institution of democratic society. Any healthy democratic society is a multi-group society. The voluntary associations in such a society presuppose freedom on the part of the individual to be or not to be a member, to join or withdraw, or to consent with others to form new association. Taken together, voluntary and involuntary associations represent the institutional articulation of the pluralistic society. In his essay, James Luther Adams discusses the historical roots of voluntary association and its relationship to the separation of church and state demanded 500 years ago by the churches of the Radical Reformation. Voluntary organizations that are concerned with social policy, such as civil rights, act on behalf of individuals to effect changes by political or non-political means, persuading elected officials or the courts to enact laws that protect the rights and well-being of the marginalized and oppressed to the benefit of the whole of our society. It takes time to change the social order, as we well know. Voice, Virginians Organized for Interfaith Community Engagement, whose tagline is "Organizing for a New Dominion of Justice and Political Participation," is such a voluntary organization, of which Brew is a member. Adams notes that the voluntary organization is a means for the institutionalizing of gradual revolution. He explains, the voluntary organization at its best offers an institutional framework within which the give and take of discussion may be promoted an institutional framework within which a given consensus or practice may be brought under criticism and be subjected to change. It offers a means for bringing a variety of perspectives into interplay. It offers the means of breaking through old social structures in order to meet new needs. It is a means of dispersing power, in the sense that power is the capacity to participate in the making of social decisions. It is the training ground of the skills that are required for viable social existence in a democracy. Replace voluntary organizations with Unitarian Universalism, with Brew, or with Voice in this excerpt, and you have a description of the value and highly important role that our faith tradition and our congregation play in the world. When you engage in the work of this congregation, in the ministries of this beloved community, as a volunteer and as a congregational leader, you develop skills that are transferable to the other voluntary organizations you are or of which you will become a member. The reverse is true as well, of course. Brew benefits from the training and skills that its members bring with them from their careers, their interests, and their hobbies. Each of you has something to offer that will help others to learn and grow spiritually, intellectually, and as leaders in our communities. Each of us must develop our leadership skills and give back to this beloved community through ministry and service to the whole. It is simply part of what it means to be a voluntary organization, part of a faith tradition, part of a covenantal community, such as Brew. When you join this or any congregation, you promise to help each other identify, develop, and apply our gifts. Hold each other accountable to this promise. Ask, how can I be in service to my church community, my church family? If you don't, then we run the risk of having the shadow side of associational behavior when internal shifts in how power is wielded result in tyranny and conformism. Can you say oligarchy? Normally, we apply this word to governments that rule with an iron fist, refusing to hear the voices of the people it is meant to serve. But the phenomenon of reducing the role of shareholders belongs not only to large business corporations. If not attentive to the dark side, churches, universities, and the like also run the risk of sinking back into social structures that do not serve as an instrument of freedom. Writing in 1962, JLA specifically lifts up special interest pressure groups and how they are not immune to this pathology of associations. When the power of the special interest group is exercised through collusion with other pressure groups, there is a danger of ignoring the common good in favor of the demands of the few. As long as the gain for members of the voluntary association also benefit many non-members, the organization will stay clear of the dark side. Adams summarizes thus: the health of democracy depends on the capacity of general welfare associations to function as countervailing powers against the narrower purposes of special interest associations. If we do not get involved in voluntary organizations with diverse membership, if we are only on the receiving end of the mass media of communications in the world of public policy, we are political eunuchs, impotent and without substance. JLA is rather blunt in his assessment of those who do not fully participate in the democratic process. He wrote, "In the democratic society, the non-participating citizens bash their own heads in." I don't for a moment believe this is true of any of you here at Brew, but we would all do well to remember the old labor slogan attributed to Joe Hill. Don't mourn, organize. Or don't agonize, organize, which was said by feminist civil rights activist Florence Kennedy. The latest twist comes from January 2017, the Women's March on Washington, when Maryam Ali said, "Don't boo, vote. Don't get frustrated, get involved. Don't complain, organize." Develop your leadership skills. The leadership development team is offering great programming already for us. Develop those skills by serving this congregation. Share your energy and enthusiasm by facilitating an adult program that nurtures spirits, strengthens capacity, and informs minds. Raise your voice and cast your vote at every opportunity. Organize again. Get involved. Organize some more. Keep hope alive. Organize. Unitarian Universalism is grounded in the principles of democratic society. Its theology and practice articulate the benefits of a pluralistic society. We need to make sure that Brew continues to show up for justice, that the good news of Unitarian Universalism is spread as far and as wide as possible here in the U.S. and around the world. Our Unitarian Universalist congregation is a voluntary organization. You are free to join the congregation as a member at any time. We ask that you sustain the life and work of this congregation by contributing financially within your means. We ask that you volunteer your time and your talents as well. Let us remember that as members of this congregation, we agree to support each other's search for truth and meaning. We promise to nurture each other, this community, and our hopes for a better world. We will encourage each other to live ethically. We will reach out to all, expanding our circle of caring. We will help each other identify, develop, and apply our gifts. We commit to being faithful stewards, giving time, energy, and money. Doing so, we will live our mission of being a safe place for seeking and service. May it be so. Amen and blessed be. At this time, I invite Bev Rooser, the chair of our stewardship committee, to come forward and introduce our call to commitment portion of this morning's worship service. We extinguish this chalice, for the worship has ended. Our service begins.